rhetorical question.
And I reckon I'll be the only one.
I hope so.
I think I'll be the only one. And regardless of party, I will probably be the only one to ever face something so insane. So I pull up. I go to the camp across the street from the facility, which is a satellite camp. Now imagine a warehouse, not too different from where we're sitting now, but bare bones. And then you have this entire dormitory, bed, cubby, little lockers, bed, cubby, bed, cubby. And it's rows of that, right? And that's how you live. Those are your living quarters. And then there's an adjacent room that has a cafeteria. There's five TVs in there. And even that's segregated because it's the black TV, the white TV, the Hispanic TV, and then there's a sports TV, and then literally what they call the CNN TV because the TV stays on CNN the whole day. So
this sounds like you just defined hell. It's racially segregated though?
TVs, yes. The remote controls are operated by people according to their race. And God have mercy on your soul if you're a white guy and you go near the remote for the black people or the Spanish people. It is all hell. Like, people will literally get stabbed with a shank if they do that.
For picking up the black remote or the Hispanic remote?
Yep. Or the white remote, for that matter. It is very political. So that's the environment I'm in. Lovely. Me, all cheery and joy. I'm like, hi, George Santos. Nice to meet you. Don't talk to me. I'm like, okay, you have a nice day. I mean, I'm definitely not cut for prison. Let's just be very honest. And
that did occur to me before they sent you away.
So that was kind of the environment, right? And then I start understanding that, I mean, the first day I walk in there, I understand that this isn't a place where people go to be abandoned and rot and forgotten about to rot. The ceiling is all made out of like this, how can I call it? This canvas. And it's all ripped up, patched up. And there's a flap hanging open and black mold, like bubbles of black mold, almost like cotton, are just like dangling off the ceiling. And you can see that the whole thing is compromised with black mold. We're breathing this in this non-ventilated space. This is the kind of environment that the warden maintains down in FCI Fairton. This is not an indictment, by the way, on the BOP. This is an indictment on a derelict in duty administrator who has no business doing her job.
This is a female warden.
Female warden, Lynn Kelly, who runs the prison. Absolutely unqualified for the job. I mean, and I say that with confidence. She can sue me. I'd love to go to a deposition for calling her unqualified. When you run a facility where the bathroom has outbreaks of ringworms and listeria, when you run a facility that you're serving inmates expired food as far back as a year.
Welcome to Pod Summarizer. Visit our website and summarize your favorites podcasts.
Chicken patties that had been frozen but expired in 2024 were still being served to inmates in 2025.
This is in Ecuador?
No. I thought I was in a Mexican prison.
This is the United States.
This is the United States. Okay. But I felt like I was in a Mexican prison because everything, by the way, fun story. Beef taco salad, chicken taco salad, beef fajita, chicken fajita are all on the menu on a constant rotation to the point you're just like, I don't want to see another tortilla or tortilla chip in my face. So this is a facility I was in, you know, canned goods that were expired. I would go to the officer in charge of the kitchen because I obviously got involved in the kitchen right away. Natural fit, like cooking, like entertaining. I said, I'll go cook for these people. This is expired. He's like, well, you got to open it. We take it by chance. If it's bad, it's good. It's garbage. If it's good, then we'll use it. I'm like, oh, great. Russian roulette with canned goods. Literally.
The botulism Olympics.
Pretty much. Yeah. So that's that. What's that was day one. Yeah, the kitchen. The kitchen is officially closed after I wrote several observations of its risks on my column for the South Shore Press because I was still writing from in there.
Wait, you were their prison columnist?
Well, no, I'm my own. I write for the column for the South Shore Press, yes, which is a New York paper. I've been writing for them for over a year. And I would still retain that column and I was writing from prison, criticizing the prison I was in and documenting my journey. Look, unfortunately, I'm known to not be scared of bucking the system. Yeah,
well, apparently.
To my detriment. But yeah. So I criticized him and I critiqued all of these things to a massive audience that I have as a platform. And it subsequently led to the kitchen closure.
But what was it like before it closed?
I mean, broken equipment, absolute filth, nothing functioning, drains that backed up and bought back the most guck you can think of, machinery that you were literally, you know, I always thought that eating the food at FCI Fairton was either I get some really, really bad food poisoning and I'm going to lose a lot of weight, or I might just not die. You know, it's like, it's either or. You can't, it's inexplicable.
What's the hand washing regimen like?
There's no hand washing regimen. It's you wear gloves. Okay. Who's washing hands? They give you gloves. They don't even give you soap to wash your hands in the kitchen. Because you're wearing gloves.
But what if the gloves are dirty?
Oh, no. It's lovely. You should see the loveliness of how... I mean, I got in trouble because I put a pair of gloves on, right? And if I'm stirring a spoon and I'm doing my things, and then I proceed to go open a box to get something, once I'm done with that box, I would switch out gloves and toss them. But I guess I was going through gloves so fast. And I got yelled at saying, like, no, you change gloves too many times. Like, no, you take it easy. Once you're gloved up for the day. I'm like, what? Like, what is going on here? You would see these guys, like some of the inmates follow that regimen. I don't care. I'm like, I'm not doing that. I eat this food. They would put on gloves. And the loveliest thing was they'd get a piece of paper, blow their nose wearing the gloves. They'd open a box. They'd touch dirty, dusty cans. And then the next thing you'd see, they're in there mushing up spices into the ground beef. And I'm like, it's like, I'm telling you, it's your own personal hell for a germaphobe. It's like, that's prison. The conditions of the kitchen were just atrocious. It's hard to explain when you have a walk-in freezer that's constantly over-freezing and breaking, and you have to thaw it, and then everything in it thaws, and then they refreeze it. And then it's like, but the chicken has expired a year, but it keeps well. Like, you got to pretend this is all normal, you know? It's just remarkable. Like, Guantanamo has better treatment for their prisoners, I assume.
Well, there's nothing like ending the day by the fire, book in your hand, dogs at your feet, cup of coffee at your side. I can tell you it works. And what makes it better is Cozy Earth. We're not even sure you've heard of the bubble cuddle blanket. We have. It's a big deal. It's soft, textured, perfect for settling down after a long day. It's like a cloud, actually. It'll make you sleepy just dreaming about it. Speaking of which, Cozy Earth also has what you need to take your sleep to the next level. We hope you're seated because this may blow your mind. Bamboo sheets. Bamboo. The fabric of the future. Actually, they are amazing. Can't believe they're from bamboo. They're temperature regulating, moisture wicking. You actually sleep cooler, smooth, breathable, super durable. If you don't believe it, try them risk-free 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. Upgrade the place you spend the most time, which is your bed.
Reflecting on the challenges faced with prison administration, the conversation shifts to encounters with fellow inmates. Some surprising allies amidst difficult dynamics. As our speaker shares insights on his daily life, listeners will discover how camaraderie flourished under unexpected circumstances and the peculiarities of prison recreation.
What are you doing with this in your office? Like, but she found a budget for that. But God forbid the budget to clean the ducts for the heater. Like, it's infuriating.
So you didn't have a problem with the guards. You had a problem with a couple of the administrators. What about the other inmates?
You know, inmates for me were, I call them extras in my journey. I mean, there was like maybe two or three.
Did you let them know?
Kind of.
They had non-speaking parts in this
they
film?
They had totally non-speaking parts in the film because look, I couldn't find a lot of similarities with a lot of them. I think there was like a group of like five or six that I could talk to, but these are well-educated individuals, very savvy, but at the same time, very liberal. So
liberal?
There are lots of liberals in prison.
What?
Oh my God, lots of liberals in prison. You'd be shocked. You'd be shocked at the amount of people who hate the president in prison. But then the moment, which is funny, the moment I got commuted, everybody was like, oh, Trump's the man. Yo, buddy, take care of me. Call my wife. I'm like, I left with a stack of phone numbers of wives that I've never called.
Actually, they're liberals. I know a lot of people who've been in prison. They all get more right wing in prison.
Well, maybe these were still not getting red-pilled yet. And I didn't do my part either, so...
What do you do for recreation?
While I was in the camp, for the 43 days that I was in the camp, the first 30 and then then a break and then 13 days, because I had that big 41 block of isolation. You know, I was in the kitchen from 7:30 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon, and it was a great refuge for me psychologically.
Yes.
Because I didn't have to deal with whatever was outside of the kitchen.
What is everyone else doing?
I don't know, honestly.
Not making license plates.
I mean, no, we don't make license plates. It's a work camp. So there's the maintenance crew. So some guys do facility maintenance, I mean, which is, you know, whatever they call maintenance there is not maintenance in the real world. And then you have the warehouse guys who are in charge of like picking up the heavy boxes of, you know, the goods that come in to operate the prison. And then you have the cleaning crew. So they're the ones in charge of cleaning the entire compound from, you know, the buildings, the bathrooms, and all the other facilities for the staff. And lastly, you have the landscapers, because this is on a big old bird reserve that was converted into a prison in 1990. So it's massive amounts of acreage and lots of green and lots of grass. And so you have a landscaping crew. So I don't know what these people do. All I know is that I was in the kitchen from 7:30 to 4:30.
Does anyone plot escape?
No. If they wanted to, you can walk off. The campers are free, literally free to roam right off, but nobody's stupid enough to do it.
Why?
Your custody points go higher and then you lose that privilege and you end up in a low or a medium facility security.
So, but can't you just wander off and go to Philadelphia?
I mean, you technically could. When you get caught, you're going to be charged with escape and your custody points go higher. So, from my understanding, nobody has attempted to escape the camp in years because once you go to the camp, it's the easiest form of prison. It's imagine an abandoned country club from the 1960s that nobody's ever gone to anymore. And one day you just decide to turn on the key and say, we're open for business. No maintenance, no nothing. You just want to operate it as is. That's what they're operating there. But in prison standards, that is it, club fed.
Wow.
No fences, no gates, no locked doors. You can roam and there's an outdoor track. And there's recreation outside. There's a weight pile, you know, a really rundown weight pile, but a weight pile for you to work out. They have an annex trailer with a laundry room for you to do your laundry. You have a little library with an actually decent selection of books, which I was very impressed. Some of my favorite authors were in there. And then you have a chapel where you can do multi-denominational prayer service. So it's very nice environment,
yeah,
as far as prison goes. So when you get there, you usually either are somebody like me who is going to hate it but not understand how good you have it,
yes,
and be a big baby about it like I was.
Well, it is prison.
Or you're going to be somebody who came from the system working yourself down throughout your very long sentence, and now you've reached the tail end of it and you've been good behavior, you've in the eyes of the BOP, rehabilitated yourself. Now you're in minimum security custody, which you're now not even considered in custody. You're out custody because there's no gates, handcuffs, none of that. So that's, nobody wants to run away from that.
What are the showers like?
Oh, I described it this way. So I want to stay consistent. Imagine a rundown gym with no maintenance, same structure, shower. Two sides of showers and an aisle in the middle, like a locker with showers on both sides with curtains that are just falling apart. Lime and every bacterial growth you can imagine growing on the walls and in the corners, peeling paint inside of each stall. Same thing goes for the toilets. And then there was something lovely that I discovered. There's this, this is what made the bathroom really unbearable for me to a point that I started having to brush my teeth with bottled water. You're not going to believe this, but in prison, there's this Muslim culture that has become very prolific in a sense. And I'm not trying to be Islamophobic here. I'm just being really agnostic.
Yeah.
Have no horse in the fight of Israelis and Jews and Islam. And
right.
No.
Non-political observation.
They have a predominant presence in the prison system. The wild thing is that before they go to pray, they have to, I guess, wash certain parts of their body.
Yes.
There were inmates hanging their ass on the sink and just washing it right there where I was
supposed. Ass washing on the sink?
Yeah.
Well, that's a bridge too far.
I mean, for anybody. And when confronted, it's like a big argument on religious freedom.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. It's an attack. It's Islamophobia.
Are these Middle Eastern Muslims or African-American Muslims?
They're African-American Muslims.
So you didn't see a lot of Egyptians?
A full pause. No. I don't think there was a single Arab in this Muslim crew that I was with. Okay. Not a single one. They were all African-Americans.
These are gang members from Philly.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Right? These were the Muslims that I was dealing with. Now, don't get me wrong. Some of them, nicest guys I've ever met.
Yeah, yeah.
But with these very uncanny habits that were just not for me. So once I walked into a situation like that, and it was literally ass washing on the sink, I said, I can't do this. I bought the 24-pack of water. Yours truly from your state here, not too far from here. Same brand.
They sell Poland Spring
they
in prison?
Do. Yeah, totally. So you can buy the 24-pack at I think 70 cents a bottle, which is not a bad deal.
No,
for prison, it's not a bad deal. We know it's a ripoff, but it's compared to their $150 for a ramen noodle, it's not a ripoff.
That's what they were charging?
It's insane. They take a-
Can you buy cigarettes?
You cannot. It's federal buildings are all smoke-free areas.
What about vape or-
No, smokeless, actually-
No nicotine.
No nicotine products. I saw a man go to the shoe for 45 days because he was caught with a contrabanded vape in there.
No way. Yeah,
that's how severe they consider it of a violation.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do they care?
I don't know.
Well, Grand Canyon University is not like most American colleges. It focuses on the things that actually matter. It is not a ripoff. It is the real thing. It's private, affordable, Christian university located in the heart of Phoenix. One of the largest universities in the country, actually. At Grand Canyon University, education is more than academics. It is about opportunity, the chance for every student to live out the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Rights are not given by the government. They were bestowed at birth, at conception, by God. That's just a fact. And Grand Canyon University is not going to lie to your kids and claim otherwise. It tells the truth. So you know you're thinking, a quality education is rare, so this probably costs a fortune. Colleges constantly jack up their costs. They probably do the same. Well, they don't, actually. GCU has maintained the same tuition for 17 straight years. They're not in education to get rich at the expense of students.
As the discussion shifts from the harsh realities of prison life, including the unexpected challenges of solitary confinement, the focus turns to a pivotal moment of transformation. Listeners can expect a gripping account of resilience, change, and George Santos's impending return to Congress.
Like, I was just like, I have a date with this bitch in Congress. That's my ground. That's my turf. And I'm in my head, I'm like, oh, Kelly, you have no idea what you just got yourself into. And I was so happy about it because it's about fairness for me. And I just proceeded my day, right? So walking the track, played a little ping pong on this, like, really at best makeshift ping pong table. Like, I had a normal day, read a little bit of my book, called home. So it's around 6 o'clock. We got our commissary sheet. So I was, you know, budgeting, figuring out what I need to do. I'm filling it out in this computer room where we have our computers to do our core links communications with our family. The light there is a lot brighter. I'm getting old. My glasses suck and I needed bright lights. So I'm filling this commissary sheet out. And an inmate comes in like, oh, you were just on TV. I'm like, I don't care. I don't really pay attention to me on TV. They're always shitting on me or whatever. So uninterested. And about 30 minutes later, the entire cafeteria erupted in, that son of a, where the fuck is Santos? Santos, come over. You were holding out on us. You going home, N-word. I'm like, what? Like, what's going on? So I go out. I'm like, stop. You guys are misunderstanding this. And the Chiron on MSNBC says, disgraced former rep George Santos commuted, soon to be released, according to Trump.
And that was the first you heard?
That was the first I heard.
Nobody told you this was coming?
No, nobody knew that day. Nobody knew.
You heard the news in the commissary from MSNBC?
From MSNBC.
Why are they playing MSNBC?
Well, there's, like I said, there's the Black TV and they particularly like watching.
Do they really?
Yeah, if it's either not on BET or on like a movie channel with like awful B-rated movies, on MSNBC, that TV.
That's where the audience is. Because I wondered that. Who watches? So it's prison in but only on the Black TV.
I guess.
Wow.
The white TV remarkably stays a lot on Fox, by the way.
I'm not surprised.
I was not shocked either. There was like a debate about where I should watch TV.
And where'd the Spanish TV go?
The Spanish TV usually stayed either on Telemundo or Univision. Like very, very Hispanic. Like,
wow.
Rarely did it go anywhere else other than those two channels. So I'm sitting there looking at this Chiron for a split second. I'm like apoplectic. Like, what? But nobody told me anything. Somebody should have called me. And then I think, I'm like, wait, nobody can make an inbound call. So I run to the emails. There's nothing there because emails take about an hour and a half to get to you of a delay because it needs to be vetted through security. So if you sent me something an hour and a half before I get it, and then if I send your response another hour and a half before you get it, because everything is monitored. And I can understand that because of criminal conduct and activity. After all, you're monitoring criminals.
Right. It's a prison. Yeah.
So it's a prison. So I just like, I didn't know what to do. So I called home. I called my partner. I called Matt. I'm like, Matt, what's going on? He's like, hysterical. Like, I just spoke to President Trump. It's over. I'm coming to pick you up. I'm like, what do you mean you spoke to President Trump? I didn't even think about going. I'm like, he called you? I was like, absolutely nuts about it. Like, wait, President Trump called Matt before he called me.
Well, you were in prison. Kind of hard to get in touch.
I'm still mad that he got the phone call first. So I hang up the phone and Tucker, I break down.
I bet.
I mean, I couldn't stop. It was like probably an hour. I was ugly, snotty, crying in that phone stall, head down, like my head and all these thoughts inundated my body, my soul. I'm going home. And it was just, I didn't know this was going to happen. I had really made peace with the fact that this was my predicament just that morning.
Yeah.
And to tell me that there's no divine intervention in this, I will never accept that because there was no palpable appetite to give me clemency, according to every single person I had spoken to.
Yeah.
And the day after I go to confession and I square away my quarrels and my pendencies with Jesus Christ, I get commuted by President Trump. I mean, I am forever humbled to the president.
It's incredible.
It's a remarkable story. And I don't believe, I don't do coincidences anymore.
No, of course not.
This was proof. If I ever needed proof God's in your life, if you really make your pledge to him, this was it. I needed this probably. And I'm not saying because it's so self-serving. No, he purposely said, you do right by me. I'm giving you a second chance.
So the second you just surrendered to it,
I just could not. There was nothing else to do. I mean, I said, I think I cried all the tears that I had for the rest of the year that hour. It was.
So how long was it till you got out?
So that was around 6:30-ish, right? When I called home. It was 11:30. I was
that
walking
night
out.
You were out.
That night, 11:30. I was walking out and my phone came in the car and I was already dialing. Like, first call I made was Marjorie Taylor Greene. At the assistance of Matt, who was prolific on Call Marjorie. I want people to know this because it's important to me. I used to say that if you want a friend in DC, get a dog, not realizing I actually had real friends. Because it's, you measure a friendship not on how much you see one another, because we all have busy lives.
Of course.
You measure a friend on when you're in your worst and how they come through for you.
Loyalty, exactly.
She was on the phone with Matt every single day, checking in to see how he was doing, giving him updates, talking to my sister. Literally, she didn't have to do that. She yielded nothing from it. This is a woman who will go out of her way for her friends and for what she believes in. And it pains me to see that so many people want to attack her. Now, I can understand politics.
Why are they attacking Marjorie? I don't understand.
It's been 11 days and I still haven't wrapped my head around it. But I'll say this. There's no bigger supporter of President Trump that I served with. And I'm saying this to the detriment of getting other colleagues and friends of mine mad at me, but there was no bigger loyalist to President Trump than Marjorie Taylor Greene in my time in Congress. Yes. I've known her since 2020, and I can tell you with good faith, she is a loyal soldier. She means well, and she wants the best for our country no matter what. And I think that to conflate that with any other issues that you might want to find a singularity with her, it is your problem, not her problem. So I say,
not in it for herself.
It's a you problem, not a her problem. And I just want the record to reflect.
Thank you for saying that. No, it's important to me just because I know so many members of Congress and she's in the tiny, tiny, tiny handful I respect and love as people. And she's just a really great person. Like I really think a lot of her.
I say it. She played therapist, best friend, mother, all of those roles to my family. And for that, I'm forever indebted because you can only dream of having that level of friendship with someone in your darkest moments when you're absent from your family and someone steps in and takes a position of counseling and consoling your family, that's a true friend. Everything else is garbage, and that's wealth.
That's amazing.
Material wealth isn't wealth. I learned this in prison. Watches, jewelry, all of that stuff. Nice cars, flashy homes. It's not wealth, Tucker.
Doesn't mean shit.
Doesn't mean crap.
Yep, I agree.
Wealth, your family, your friends, your health, that's real wealth. And I want to measure my wealth that way moving forward, because there's no point in measuring it the way I used to measure it.
And prison was amazing for you. As much suffering as you went through, it sounds like it was transformative.
It was absolutely a wake-up call. It gave me everything I needed to look into the mirror and look at the man staring back to realize you're in trouble. You've done A, B, C, D, E, F, G wrong. And
wow. That's the beginning of wisdom and freedom.
That's the point. I feel for the first time in my life, free. Free of, I have no reservations to what I'll say. I have no reservations of what I care, of what society thinks of me.
Having grappled with the harsh realities of confinement, the speaker recounts a profound journey of self-discovery and societal reflection. Now, they delve into the shifting political landscape and the impact of recent events, sparking a poignant discussion on personal convictions and national identity.
You should be put away, but I don't think you should.
But that's the point. We're not allowed to kill.
We're not supposed to kill.
We are not. No.
And we need to end the practices of death penalty, in my opinion.
And the culture
it needs to be
death.
Revisited. It really
does. People like objects. No, I completely, vehemently agree with you. So you were out of circulation for a while. You're obviously very connected and like on everything in normal life. Then you're just like off grid. Literally in the shoe. What did you notice about the changes that took place in the months that you were gone? Did you notice a different country when you get back?
Totally. I'm still trying to struggle with two things.
Really?
Two very big things. I left and we were celebrating President Trump. And now I come back, there's this weird segment of social media who are all these conservative influencers taking dunks on the president, which I'm like super like lost at. And it all spans from Israel and Palestine.
Yes, it does.
And I look at that. I'm pretty Zion. I'm a pretty prolific Zionist, okay? But I've also learned throughout the last few months that I don't want my president to be at the mercy of a prime minister who is toxic and causing great pain to our country now, because President Trump goes out there, puts his neck on the line, does an amazing, formidable peace deal. Amazing. Like something extraordinary. I mean, the man deserves a Nobel Prize. I don't care what anybody says. Yeah. I don't care what the liberal bench of the Nobel Prize Association or whatever you call them thing. The reality is Donald Trump is a peace president. He wants to broker deals of peace and end war. He does this extraordinary measure, is now working towards putting the conflict of Ukraine-Russia to an end. Hopefully we can achieve that. Only to see that people like Bibi Netanyahu are sabotaging that. I'm concerned.
It's shocking.
It's shocking because he should be grateful, because President Trump is going out of his way, doing a formidable job.
Yeah.
And this is how you repay him?
Spending all this time, all this money, trying to fix other people's
time
problems.
Is a commodity that not a lot of us can afford. So I have to come to realization, despite being a staunch defender of Israel and the Jewish people and their right to exist and their right to be in Israel, I at the same time now live in a place where I think it's time BB move on. He has become toxic.
Yes.
He has become pretty much the merchant of death, almost the face of it.
Yes.
On both sides, every Israeli soldier and family and every Palestinian soldier and Hamas terrorist and family, although I'm not too sympathetic for the terrorists.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, the only good terrorists alive, the only good terrorists in my world are the ones that are not alive.
Yeah.
Even though I have this profound opinion of death and life and that we should not kill, but there's a special place in hell for terrorists. Let's just put it that way. Especially after what I saw when I was in Congress after the initial October 7th attack, the video. I'm sure you saw the video, the baby. And you know, that stayed in my nightmares for quite some time.
Yeah.
So I every single death at this point, I think is easily being attributed to Bibi, because he is overstepped. And
well,
And in 2 months and a half that I've been gone, it gave me so much clarity because I was out of the rhetoric machine. I was out of the spin room. And I'm just like, my president is going to bat for a man that is not being forthcoming with him.
At all.
At all.
It's humiliating.
You know, I don't like it. I'm very protective of my country. I'm very protective of President Trump because President Trump is somebody, and everybody is saying, oh, you're going to now go simp for him. I'm sorry. I've been simping, whatever that means, for Trump since 2015, since he came down the golden escalators. Like, there's just, stop. You're barking up the wrong tree. Yes. I am a big fan. There's very little he can do at this point. And I mean, very little he can do that would make me not like him. I mean, I don't think there's a lot. He can't, if he kills somebody, depending on who it is, I might be like, well, that person had it coming. I'm kidding. I'm not there yet.
No, but watching someone you love and admire, to whom you're grateful, Trump, mistreated by an ungrateful foreigner whose salary we pay is beyond.
It's gotten to a point where and then there's also this other aspect of this, which is anybody who says what I'm saying now gets accused of being on the Qatari payroll.
Yeah.
So well, I'm sure,
I've been there, Mr. Santos.
By the way, the check has not hit my mailbox. So
it's like at this point, tell me about it.
The second thing to really bring it to perspective is, what are we doing in this country to really fix anything? The government shut down. Schumer wants to make this the Republican shutdown so bad. Yep. It's almost like Gretchen Wiener in Mean Girls trying to make Fetch happen. It ain't gonna happen. It's not gonna happen. So I don't know how so much has changed in 2.5 months, but I'm here. I mean, I'm literally living an existential crisis in my life right now. In New York City, I'm at the precipice of having an actual dangerous man become the mayor of the largest city in the country that is responsible for 10% of the American GDP, become mayor of a $118 billion annual budget. We're leaving. By all barometers, I mean, do you know how I check out my barometers now are not polls anymore? I just go to Polymarket.
Yeah.
When you look at Polymarket and it's a 93% chance that this Mandami guy is going to win, let me tell you this thing. Mandami is the next mayor of New York City. There's no wishful thinking. There's no sensational ads or sensational headlines on the New York Post that are going to say Cuomo eats 10% of Mandami's lead, narrowing the gap. Hello, wake up. It's over. I've learned this throughout the last year. I have yet to see Polymarket get something wrong.
Yep.
And when I see something like that, it's over. So I don't get paid by them to say that, by the way.
No, I get it.
I'm just making this very clear. It is over. It's cooked. So I look at this.
And you're leaving New York.
Oh, it's over. I had 37 years, New York City resident, born and raised in Queens, New York City. I have lived in various parts of Queens throughout my life, but I'm originally from Jackson Heights, Queens. Proud of it. My aunt still lives there. She's lived there for 40 years. My dad still lives there. He's lived there for 40 years. I have no desire whatsoever to stay in New York City or New York State at that, because it doesn't matter if you're fleeing the insanity of a madman in the city when you have, I lose the words to describe our governor. So I'll just leave it at, you have literally two Looney Tunes running the state and the city.
Yes.
Where do you go? I'm not staying there. So I'm so happy we're leaving. I mean, I'm literally actively picking. We're packing. We already know where we're going.
You're leaving the state.
We're totally leaving the state. We're going down south. We're leaving the state. There's nothing left for me there at all. It's
shocking.
Just, and I love New York. New York's... Yeah. My image is largely tied to being a New Yorker. You know, tell it how it is.
Well, you're offended to go to prison in New Jersey. That's what a New Yorker you are. Yeah. You're like a bridge and tunnel prisoner. You hate it.
I'm like, I still am offended that he sent me to Jersey. I should have gone to Otisville. But my point is, this is how serious it is to me. So this is another big change. It's an existential one for me. I'm uprooting my life. I'm moving far away from my family because my poor aunt, she just retired. She set up, she's well retired. So there's no point in her moving. My dad's about to retire in 2 years. There's no point in him getting up to move. You know, like they're rooted there. I'm not. I'm 37. I'll put my roots elsewhere. I'll uproot it. I don't care. And it's not a place to raise a family. We're looking to adopt kids next year because we think it's time to like help kids who are abandoned in foster care. Let's adopt two kids, give them a life, put them through school, give them whatever they want, education, give them a fair shake instead of letting them become a statistic. But I don't want them to grow up in a place like New York City.
That's all for today. Visit podsummarizer.xyz and start creating summaries of your own podcast in just seconds. Don't miss it.